The other day I tried to pat my belly and rub my head at the same time, and then I remembered I'd deconstructed.
This is the Ruth Stonehouse podcast presenting the new chapbook series with Zoe Ryder-White.
Hi, welcome to the Ruth Stonehouse podcast. I'm Bianca Stone. And I'm so excited to be joined today by the poet Zoe Ryder-White. Zoe Ryder-White's poems have appeared in many magazines, including Thrush, Hobart, Six Finch, Three Penny Review, Crab Creek Review, and Subtropics. She's authored several chapbooks, A Study in Spring with the poet Nicole Callahan, as well as the book Elsewhere, another collaboration with Nicole Callahan from Six Finch. She's a former public elementary school teacher. She edits books for educators about the craft of teaching, which is amazing. And we're talking today about her newest book. It's a chapbook from Factory Hollow Press, and it's called Hyperspace, and it's gorgeous. And thank you so much for being here, Zoe.
Thank you for having me. Sorry I interrupted your introduction laughing.
That's fine. That's the best kind of thing to do in an introduction is to just bark out a laugh.
I mean, why not?
I know. I've definitely been at some readings and laughed when somebody's introducing me, especially if it's like a really old bio that they found online, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah, that, but I don't think that's the most current, but that's close.
Yeah, I know. I was like, this is from 2020, but it'll have to do. So. Yeah, Hyperspace. I'm so excited to talk about this book on a couple of different levels. We've been having this ongoing discussion about the construction and conceits around manuscripts themselves, both full length and chapbooks. But then also just your subject matter is so beautiful and relevant right now. In Hyperspace, Hyperspace itself as a thing in the book is both material and immaterial, a place of great loneliness, but also a place, it seems, to be alone, to want to be alone. And I'm curious about, just tell me a little bit about the idea behind putting this book together, that the first time that you imagined this space, and what that looked like to you, and what your first thoughts about turning this into a chapbook were. Your initial reaction to that idea.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking about that this morning. I was trying to remember when I wrote the first one, and Letter Home from Hyperspace was the first one. I didn't intend to write any more than that, and I think it was 2018, summer of 2018, and I think I had encountered a prompt somewhere to write a poem that was a letter home from a city that you'd never been to. So I wrote a poem called Letter Home from Halifax, about Halifax, Nova Scotia, which I've never been there. And I thought, this is so great. You can write as though you know what you're talking about, even when you don't. And it was really fun to do that. And then I think I was just looking back in my files, and the next poem that I wrote the next day was Letter Home from Hyperspace. And I think I've always been really fascinated by these sort of liminal in-betweenish spaces, and the earthbound version is like a tide pool or a ditch or the sort of the spaces on the edge of distinction, so that there's sort of this like mix of flora and fauna this mix of just more than one thing existing at the same time.
Right, it's like the gray area of
So I love ditches in particular. I wrote a bunch of letters from the ditch too. Maybe awesome. A little less successful because mostly it's just like me. Okay, but just the ditch.
I just love it, letters from the ditch. That's like so. I love that already. Yeah. Don't give up on that project.
There are a bunch of them, so maybe I'll go back to that at some point. But Hyperspace, it's sort
of, how is hyperspace different than space?
It's not even a real thing. It's like a sci-fi thing. It's like
oh my god, there's this cardinal like sitting right outside my window.
I can hear it.
Yeah. It's amazing, but oh my god. It's like a tree that just flowered, a fruit tree, and he's like, oh, like sitting at the top, like singing for a mate, and my cat just jumped up. Sorry for the noise.
No, it's good.
But yeah, hyperspace is like extra space.
It's like extra space. It's also the in between, because it's like, you know, when the Millennium Falcon starts going into hyperspace. I loved that so much as a kid, like watching those lines. You know, the lines are going like that, and you're not anywhere yet, but you're about to go, and then you're going. But
yeah, it's like the rearing back before you shoot forward.
Yeah. So there's sort of, it's sort of a liminal space in space. And also, my husband reads a lot about physics and understands it a lot better than I do. But he'll tell me things about what he's reading about. So. You know, like spooky action at a distance is like quantum entanglement and things like
that. Oh my God, there's nothing more fun for poets than just like,
oh my God,
dipping their toe into physics.
Right, and it's just like, a toe. It's not even a toe, it's like
the tip of your toenail. It's enough. It's like,
yeah. And I think too, like it appealed to me, you're right, that there's something lonely about being there, but there's also something sort of appealing about the loneliness and the solitude. I have three kids. I have a 12-year-old and 5-year-old twins. And so I think they were three when I was starting to write these, and solitude has been something that's been hard to come by.
I know, I was like, I relate to this.
I want to go just like take off my clothes and float around by myself.
Yeah.
Out there.
Yeah. Speaking of that, you know, there's a couple of times that, I mean, definitely the body is important in this book. And a couple of times you say, with no body, I'm all body. And I thought that was really, it seems like an important factor in this as well. And it's another theme that keeps coming up in these discussions, manuscript discussions, with just this sort of like investigation of the self as mm-hmm. you understand the body and the self together, and sort of needing, I don't even know if it's needing to detach from the body or just it just happens, or, you know, it's just a constant like push and pull between being grounded in the body and then being like out in space. But talk a little bit about, I don't know how the body did. Was that an important like catalyst for you in talking about this space? Like sometimes the body seems to actually be existing in hyperspace, and then other times it seems like there is no body at all.
There is none, right? I guess that's sort of the confusion about being a self in a body on a planet in space in real life too, whatever real life is. You know, I think about that all the time. Like, what is this thing? I'm very rooted in it. You know, I love the physical world, and I delight in the physicality of being with my kids and, you know, my friends and my husband and my dog. You know, I feel really often really connected to the body, and that there's no real distinction between the body and the spirit, whatever, you know, all the other stuff. And that it's almost silly to spend so much time thinking about it. But at other times, I don't feel like that. I feel like, what is this thing? And who is moving it around? You know, it's a weird back and forth sort of pendulum feeling. So I think that's why in that hyperspace conceit, sometimes there is a body walking around doing stuff, or floating around doing stuff. I mean, there's certainly objects and things, but sometimes there isn't. And I think I like best when I'm not thinking about the distinction at all. I feel most comfortable when I'm not, I'm just like living life, walking around life.
Well, then it's sort of like simultaneously both. Just thinking about that gray area again, that's what I love so much about the imagination of this book, is that it's like the place, hyperspace itself, where sometimes it feels like very material, you're sitting on something, for example, or holding an object, and other times it feels very empty and there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. But just those contradictions can both exist at the same time, and that's mm-hmm. that's not wrong, you know. So I think let's look at one of the poems from the book so people can know what the hell we're talking about.
Sure. Should I read that first one?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
Letter Home from Hyper.
Look at this beautiful cover.
Oh yeah.
It's so I'm glad beautiful. That I love yeah. it so much.
I'm so glad. You are an easy author too. That's all I want to hear is I love it. I'm like, okay, great.
That's exactly what I felt. I had no idea that you were going to make the cover actually, or that you were involved. So I was delighted.
Yeah, it's very, very like side gig thing we love to do, but
yeah,
Ben and I, awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, good collaboration. okay, so this is Letter Home from Hyperspace. All this planning to get here and I couldn't bring my body. More than one planet has rings, you know, and if I had a me, I'd want those rings around it. Though they burn, they remind me of gold dust thrown across a stripe of light, knives, electric lassos, sugar. Without the body, I am all body, which is to say all mouth. The stars are more violent than expected and more tender. We drift through each other from time to time. In spite of this lack of tissue and bone, there are points of heat that want pressing, same as home, but who has hands? If you were here, you'd know what to do.
Hmm. Beautiful. Tell me about was this one of the early poems that you wrote for the series?
Yeah, that was the first one.
That was the first one, okay.
Yeah, that was the first sort of, oh, I can be anywhere. I can write from any location. I also really love letters. And I love to read letters, collections mm-hmm. of letters. I was a very avid letter writer until email happened. But I still write letters, actually. I still write paper letters. I have a couple of friends that I write to who write back, which is just like the most amazing, distinct joy to open your mailbox and there's a letter that somebody wrote on with their hands.
Yeah.
So I think that's why the letters, the letter appeals to me a lot. But that was the first one, yeah, that I wrote from hyperspace. What did you ask about that? I got distracted by talking about.
I don't remember, but I the fact that it is an address to somebody, you know, I got the sense in the poems that the speaker really wanted to be out, like away from everybody. I was thinking about I knew you had kids, and I feel like sometimes you do. You're physically, your body is very invaded a lot of the time. Yeah. In your space, but just any human can feel that in a relationship sure. or whatever. But just the claustrophobia of the body itself and the speaker really wanting to be gone and alone and thinking and working things out and having, you know, like a hyperspace writing retreat. But
exactly.
Yeah. It's more like a metaphysical retreat or so, you know, it's like, you need this sort of ambiguous space in order to have spontaneous, like creative thoughts or something, you know, like right. you just like crave this like philosophical like niche where you can just sort of hide. I mean, that's just like, that's so what poets want, you know. It's mm-hmm. But at the same time, then you go to that place and you're writing letters to the you,
right?
You're reaching, you start immediately, you start reaching back, and like right. I felt like really I thought that was such a human that was such a human impulse in the poems.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I guess I haven't really thought of it like that before. Just the just thinking about what was going on in my real life at that time. We lived in a little apartment in Red Hook in Brooklyn, and the twins were getting bigger, and there was not a lot of space, physical space for any of us. And it was I remember it so fondly. It was such a beautiful sort of crashing time in a lot of ways. But also just that as a parent, maybe especially as a mother, that the sort of loss of distinction between your own body and your children's. Which I love. I mean, I love it.
Right.
I love the cuddliness. But yes, and also I guess the sort of the how to make space for a creative life in the midst of, as part of a busy family life and work life, and you know how to do that. So when I write still is every day, but after everybody's asleep, that's like my sacred
at
time,
night.
At night. Yeah, and I was never a night person, but I have become one because that's
like a necessity.
Quiet and you know, sort of figuring out that that's really crucial to me for to have and preserve that space, even if it's just a little bit of time. If I'm super tired or something, I still have to. Mostly I write and read during that time. Sometimes I don't write, sometimes I just read, but
just as important.
Yeah, and I think just figuring out how to integrate, you know, like integrate all those different pieces into a whole human and to be a distinct part of the family unit, as well as sort of the blurred edge mama, you know, like it all can happen at the same time.
I know there's a lot of anxiety in trying to like compartmentalize all these different selves, and you know, our culture reinforces that, and I think, you know, there's so many just writers bitching. I'm one of them, like bitching with other writers about, oh, I just want to write, but I feel like such a monster, like my kids, totally. Like I feel like I'm emotionally removed from them because I'm trying to work things out, and like I don't want to fuck them up, and like I don't want to put my writing above them, you know. They don't, I honestly don't. I'm not one of those people that's like, my art's more important than anything else. It's like, it's really not more important than my daughter's life.
Right, no.
And so I don't have to choose. Yeah. It's not like, it's not so frustrating, but it, the benefits outweigh the frustration just tenfold. But you know, I wrote down that line, here in hyperspace, I'm a thought thrown against a ceiling fan. there's like, it's almost like, it kind of makes me think like, it's like an obliteration, like a wanting to just obliterate all that thought, that rumination, that place that's saying like, I want to be a writer and a mother at the same time. Like, I want to do all these things, like trying to figure it out. And it's like, I don't know, just that kind of thought. I do want to throw that against the ceiling fan. You know, I do want to like hyperspace almost like becomes this, like, it's like writers. Tell me what you think about this. Poets who are coming up with an idea to write a series of poems. It's such a gift to find some way in to talk about ineffable things that aren't just one thing. And landscapes seem to be a perfect landscapes, even though this is like mm-hmm. a even this strange landscape, but it is yeah. landscapes seem to be perfect because you can do so much there and so much can change. There can be such different things occurring in that landscape, in that place.
Yeah.
And it's like an imagined place, so.
Right. And then you can, yeah, it was really a trick for myself, really. It was a trick to be able to say what I was trying to say and think what I was trying to think. It's like, I think.
It is a trick. It's like
every like, poem that I've written that I like has yeah. that some sort of trick. I have to trick myself out of my self-consciousness in a way. That's like the dream poems too are like that. The sum of this I dreamed poems that are in that collection there. It's the same thing. Maybe I did dream some of it, but some of it I didn't dream. And sometimes I'll write a poem that says I dreamed blah, 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 and I didn't dream it. I'm just making it right. up. But. Right. But it gives me a little leg up or a toehold into that kind of, I guess.
Well, dream is like the same thing. Our dream's perfect because I was just noticing the songs I was listening to, they were Phoebe Bridgers songs and like Boy Genius songs. And I was noticing like a lot of times that dreams, they talked, there was like a line about, I dreamed this, I dreamed that. And dreams are a perfect example of the trick you can use that even that your own body and mind uses in order to work through these complicated reality,
yeah.
you know, confrontations with reality and self.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that you say that.
Yeah. I had written those poems, those some of this I dream poems sort of alongside.
Yep.
The hyperspace poems, and I didn't know that they were going to go together. I'm just going to make my mail stop making noise.
Let's read one of them. Yeah.
I didn't know that they were going to go together. I didn't know I was making a chapbook. I had them. I write so many poems, and most of them I don't revise, and they live in my Google Drive, and there's just like, there's so many from all these years. And I find the process of collecting, I like revising an individual poem, but the process of collecting and making a manuscript is sort of excruciating. But this wasn't because there was the hyperspace trick. And then when I figured out I could sort of intersperse some of this I dreamed poems because they go together for that same reason. That was fun. There was sort of a joyful joy in that process in a way that I haven't felt when trying to make a manuscript on my own before. I have many failed ones that I will not send anywhere.
Yeah.
But the only other time I'd made a finished manuscript was with Nicole for those two other chat books. And we have one more too that we wrote, I guess that was about a couple years ago. That's not finished yet, but because that's their conversations, right? They sort of guide themselves when there's another mind there.
Having an anchor, having a theme is like kind of essential, even if it's like a very abstract, arbitrary one in putting a manuscript together. So okay, do you want to read the number six, some of this I dreamed?
Dreamed one? Sure.
Yeah.
This I did dream, actually. A real dream, not even a fake one. Some of this I dreamed, number six. I was dying from something that had turned my insides to swollen light. A handful gathered around, backlit, humans by the shape of them, expectant. Waiting. I waited too. What happens now? I asked, feeling important. No one knew. A little light leaked from my throat's hollow, but it was easy enough to plug the hole with a fingertip. What do you feel like doing? Someone asked. Isn't it your birthday? I feel like a balloon, I said, like I've swallowed too much air. Oh, that phase, said someone who died already and remembered. If you walk around the yard, you might feel better. My daughter's cat watched from under the cedar tree, his mouth stuffed with bright yellow feathers.
What I love about this poem in the collection is the address to death, because there is this sense that this is death, this space. And you sort of don't know you're dead, or you know, it's, tell me about that. Or is there anything to tell? Or just tell me about this.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, yeah, it's part of the big mystery of what goes on after,
like,
the
body. This, what happens now?
What happens now? What happens now? And yeah, it does feel like a fit with the hyperspace. Maybe you go there for a while. It's drift around. I don't know. But yeah, I actually did just dream that, almost just exactly like that. I dreamed I was like dead, dying, but it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a problem. Mm-hmm. It was just sort of happening, and I was, felt weird. And I had, you know, I don't remember there being people that I actually know, but it was like figures of people that I knew. And then my daughter's cat had actually just died. He got hit, and we had just had a family burial of this beloved beast. I think that was part of it too, just thinking about the little cat. He was so lifelike in his death, you know, his little paws were just the same. Something about, yeah, just the body looked like the living body, but was definitely not.
Yeah, not probably having to sort of watch your child experience loss. Pets are usually the first experience loss. Explaining death is, I mean, it's sort of like, we all die.
Yeah,
there's not much to.
Yeah, my twins, they're five now, but there is a time maybe about a year ago, and they just talked about death all the time. And my daughter Ivy, we were driving by a cemetery, and she said, "Mom, you're really lucky that you have three kids. Some people only have two." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Well, in case one of us goes to the grave, you'll still have two left."
Oh my god,
no one's going to the grave.
Yeah, Jesus.
But they're so matter of fact about it at that age. I don't know if your daughter.
I know. No, she totally is.
She's my son too. He's just like, you know, "Mom, when you die, I'll carry your body around for you. I'll take care of your bones." And
it's, oh my
just,
god, just,
I mean, I love.
That's so cute.
Sweet.
Yeah.
It seems like no big deal to them. And is it because they don't understand, or is it because they understand more than we do?
Yeah. Well, it's true that I mean, it completely links to our anxiety about the body, because I think when you start getting older and you start sort of thinking harder about it, you're like, wait a minute, I'm just gonna die, and I'm in this like body that's constantly dying.
It's such a trip too. I mean, I'm gonna be 47 next month, and it's so weird. It's so normal and just weird to, like, I mean, I'm fine. I'm, you know,
right,
luckily quite healthy, and, you know, but it's a very strange thing to be getting older and to see people I love struggling in their bodies with their bodies, and it's coming for all of us.
Well, I'd love for you to read one more poem before to sing us out here.
Okay. Which one should I read? Let's see. This one's called The Unbodied. It's just where the page fell open.
Sounds great.
Where the staple is. The Unbodied. The other day, I tried to pat my belly and rub my head at the same time. And then I remembered I'd deconstructed that vacillating between dimensions leaves me weepy and slightly nauseous in spite of occasional euphoria. I saw a warbler out here once, but I was too 2D at the moment to ask her into my hand. Nothing to stand on. Mostly I just float around, drink, compose text I'd send if I had that kind of reception. I do get Earth every hour or so on the hi-fi, sometimes Proxima Centauri. The voices say, I am all alone. They sing it. We should make a band, The Unbodied. It's a fully inclusive space. The acoustics are good if you like endless reverb.
Oh, I love that. That song so much. Zoe, thank you so much for coming and talking to me about this.
Thank you so much for having me and for making such a beautiful cover. It's such a perfect fit.
Yeah, it really was a perfect fit for me. I'm a total sci-fi dork, so yeah.
I am going to figure out a way to get myself a yellow jumpsuit and
Ray oh cut. My God, I'm seeing him. Yeah, I was like, this is really perfect color jumpsuit. Thank you. And I will put a link to where to get the chapbook from Factory Hollow Press on awesome. The show notes page. And okay, have a great rest of your Sunday.
You too. Okay. Bye. Take care. Bye.